this episode of the Tennis IQ podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing slumps. And the reason we decided to discuss this today is because it's really something everybody has gone through, whether it's a losing streak of matches, you know, a number of matches that you've lost in a row, or simply just not playing your best for a period of time, or that feeling that you're not playing well. And we're going to do an overview of the topic, discuss some research that we've found that we think is relevant and you all will find interesting, and then some approaches for how you can handle slumps and, you know, potentially ways to get out of a slump. And I think a good way to start, and this is actually from some of the research I've seen, is from an article, and we can link to this. It's from a research article let me just pull up all the names here. So I'm giving everybody due credit. It's by Chris Brown, Joanna Butt, and Mustafa Sarkar. I know we've discussed some of Mustafa Sarkar's research in the past here from Sheffield Hallam University, and we can link to that. But what was interesting is in this study, they interviewed and did a focus group of different expert cricket players and, looked at players who had been in a slump and looked at how they handled it and looked at what are some of the factors that determined how well they were able to handle the slump ultimately. And I found this really interesting just looking at these different factors. Couple of the big ones, or the four big ones, were number one, the appraisal of the slump, how they were viewing the slump, you know, and this, and within these different categories, there were different subcategories. So within that, there was maintaining a positive mindset, causal attributions, and challenge or threat appraisal. So really, how are you viewing the slump itself? So that was the first one. Second one is controlling performance states. So how are you able to use your mental skills, things like breathing, things like self-talk, things like routines, in order to control your arousal states, your performance states, your level of intensity when you're performing, in order to perform better? So that was the second one. Third one was personal protective factors. So, what are some of the personal characteristics that you have, and how does that impact how you're handling that slump? And the last one was the context of the slump itself. So what I found interesting, why I think it's an important place to get started, is that this research really showed that there are so many, you know, these four really distinct separate factors that impacted how elite athletes handled slumps. It really ranged from more personal characteristics to mental skills and mental tools that were used, to really how a slump is viewed, and then the context itself. So I think as we think about, you know, this topic and then approaches to how to handle it, it's important to remember all the different factors at play.
I think appraisal is a really good place to start, Josh, because that's, you know, what is that? That is us looking back and trying to figure out what is happening. Why are we losing, or why are we not performing well? And how one does appraise that can then drive how you feel going forward. To be clear, when we're talking about slumps, whether they be simply not playing well for a period of time or simply losing, those are things that are not completely within our control. Yes, we have some influence on both, but they're not fully within our control. Of course, we all want to win. We all would like to perform well. Hence, you know, we make some appraisals about how we're doing with that. We make some judgments on that. So yes, these are important concepts, but I think then it factors into some of those other things that you mentioned, is can we start to understand, well, what is it we're appraising here? What are we really judging? Is my appraisal actually part of the problem? Maybe by appraising something in a way that, well, I've been playing poorly for the last few weeks, Is that getting in the way in itself, in that you are creating a pattern of something that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy if you don't go forward to that? I think the next step you mentioned was something to do with using your mental skills and the ability to perhaps switch from what is a better appraisal of what is happening. When we are on streaks of not playing well or losing, what are some of the things that are affected? Our confidence is affected. Perhaps our belief in our ability to even perform well or to win matches is affected. And we don't always want results and performance levels to be the single drivers of those things. So I do think the appraisal is really important part of this. And you mentioned challenge or threat appraisals as part of that. So we've talked a lot about in past episodes the importance of having a challenge mindset, not only to build mental fortitude in tennis, but also to put the sport in proper context, meaning that it is a challenge. It should be a challenge. Can we even see perhaps whatever situation we're in right now as a challenge in itself to overcome? So I think that the research you found, granted, is around cricket, and I guess I would be interested to know how does that get felt amongst team members, right? We're talking about tennis, and yeah, there are tennis teams, but where it's more of a coactive sport than an interactive sport, like say cricket or even soccer and other sports are more coactive than say cricket or baseball. But how do team members start to believe these things? Because I could see this happening even with a college tennis team, where if we have a couple of tough losses, and maybe we just, set the efficacy, the self-efficacy of the team starts to get affected by some of these things. So I think it's a fascinating topic. And it's a really interesting article that you found and how we can try to take that research and apply it to tennis.
Absolutely. And I know we've discussed in other episodes how with different sports, obviously there are different factors at play, right? Team versus individual. You mentioned coactive versus interactive, which is a good point too. And obviously each sport has its unique factors and challenges. But there are a lot of underlying principles as it relates to sport and performance psychology. And that's as it relates to this particular article, just the way that it was broken down and just I think viewing it in these dimensions is something that we can apply to tennis players as well.
For sure. And I know when you first proposed this topic, I went in a different direction in terms of, trying to do some research on this, because I had researched this topic at an earlier point, maybe a couple of years ago, which was more about the concept of psychological momentum, because I think that that can also be a factor in slumps or streaks of not playing well, but also in playing well. Psychological momentum is not necessarily just a one-directional thing. It you can have feel like you've got great confidence and about a great streak, or feel the opposite way. And I actually think it works in nicely with what you brought in as a factor from this other paper, because there's certainly an appraisal there. There are certainly mental skills that one can use to either continue the momentum or break the momentum, depending on the situation. It's certainly contextual. So yeah, I think we could apply a lot of that to psychological momentum and the research that you found with the cricket players. So when I think of like psychological momentum, I guess we'll talk about it more from the negative side of this. It really comes down to we as human beings love to put order around chaos. We look for patterns of things happening, and sometimes we put maybe too much of a pattern on things or believe in it too much. And that can be helpful at times. It can be distracting at other times, especially when in a situation like we're talking about with slumps and losing streaks, because it's not helpful in that regard. Doesn't mean it's not a real thing. Psychological momentum can be a real thing if you believe in it. You know, one of the things I've always tried to emphasize with players that I work with is I'm a total believer in positive momentum. So when we feel like we've got the hot hand, we've got confidence, yeah, let's ride that wave. But I believe that any negative momentum that's going against us can be broken at any moment in time. If, as you mentioned earlier, Josh, if you choose to go back to your strengths, choose to just put yourself in the moment, because I think the one thing, and we've mentioned this many times with tennis, perhaps momentum in other sports is different because there's more of a flow to it. But we're constantly stopping and restarting. Every single point starts from a fresh perspective. Every game begins at zero. Every set begins at zero. So you're never really penalized for anything that has happened in the past. And if you can remember that and always just bring yourself as much as possible to a fresh start with every point, every game, every set, you can break, you know, this supposed momentum that your opponent may have. You can change how you're playing at any moment in time if you could just focus on your strengths, what you can control, bringing more discipline to your own process. And so I think in some regards, this is where tennis, maybe we have an advantage over some other sports in which, you know, like basketball is one of those sports where I think momentum really can build and build. You've got the energy of the crowd and the players are all feeling it and things like that. And yeah, you could maybe break some of that with a timeout. And that's often why we see teams call timeouts, because disruptions do break momentum. You know, a halftime can break it, a timeout can break it, etc. But I think in tennis, we have so many interruptions that, so in a match, I think you can really break it. I think you can also apply psychological momentum to, you know, performance from match to match to match. You start to add a pattern to that. You start to, in a way, create this pattern in your mind. It creates momentum for you. It affects your confidence. How are you going to break that? Is that even a helpful pattern? So I think it's a different way of looking at it, although I think it's complementary to those four areas that you highlighted earlier.
Yeah, I think you bring up an important point just about some of the unique attributes of tennis in the scoring system in the sport, and how it's not a sport where you can run out the clock like you can in many others, where the player who's on the other side of the net, and you know, the player on the other side of the net has to finish the match off. And as we've talked about in many episodes, that can be a really tough ask. We've seen players, even the best players in the world, struggle in those positions to finish off a match. So even if a player is losing and not playing well, you're always in it. You always do have a chance until the match is over. Where in another sport, if a basketball team is down by 30 points with 5 seconds to go, it's over. You can't do enough fouling at that point to turn that around, where somebody in theory could be down 6-0, 5-0, 40 love. And if you keep winning points, you're going to turn that match around. So it is different in that way. And I also like that you brought up, you know, as it relates to psychological momentum, you know, these self-fulfilling prophecies, because I think that's a really important factor here. Whether it's, okay, I've lost a few matches in a row, this is just going to continue today, or this is going to continue this weekend in my tournament, or on the other side of things, you know, there can be those self-fulfilling prophecies as it relates to, you know, how you view a match or certain types of opponents. Oh, I always lose to this type of player. I never play well against this type of player. I always struggle to close out a match, or I'm always a slow starter in matches. And when you believe that and you buy into it, it makes it more likely to happen itself. So, I think it's important when we think about this topic and we think about how we as sports psychology professionals, you know, can help players handle it, or how coaches can help players handle it, that it's important to go back to some important things. And I think you brought up a couple of them, like being in the moment, like thinking about your strengths, like thinking about how your emotions and how your time in between points impacts, you know, the next point, where with some people, okay, maybe you've lost a couple of matches in a row and then you fall behind, you know, you go down a couple games in a match, and rather than saying, okay, you know, I'm down 3-1 in this first set here, I'm down a break, I have to fight, you know, and like right now, it's, oh, here we go again. Right. And once you get to that point, it's really hard to dig yourself out of that hole. If you could start to build some of that momentum, it becomes easier and easier, but it can be very easy to fall into that trap in that moment, especially if you're in a slump or you haven't been playing so well. So I think, you know, I think focusing on some of these factors, like, you know, okay, what do my emotions look like? How am I reacting to lost points? And what does my self-talk look like? Okay, am I losing a point and I'm saying, oh, this is just like my last match and just like all these matches recently? Or am I able to play one point at a time, right? And put each point behind me and go into the next point with really a fresh, you know, way of looking at it, and not be carrying that negativity and the emotions from the past point, or even past points in the match, or even past matches, you know, not carrying that with you, and be able to reset and go into that next point, giving yourself the best possible chance. So I think as we think about it, you know, that there are different factors that we want to think about, things like, you know, playing to your strengths, things like being in the moment, not focused on whatever's happened in the past that's going to be, or whatever might happen today or in the future. And also, you know, being aware of our emotions, being aware of our self-talk. I think these are some really important factors.
And if we're thinking about, like we said earlier, losing or not playing well, again, those are things that are not completely within our control. So can we shift to assessing performance based on more controllable factors or more controllable process goals? So instead of, you know, all right, I always get off to a poor start, I always have a hard time in first rounds, I always struggle with this, or I've been playing poorly for the last couple of weeks, okay? Can we bring it back down to something that we can control better, and then assessing our performance based on that? And it could be as simple as our routine, our body language, perhaps a specific pattern of play that we want to play. So it might be, all right, we really want to focus on keeping the ball cross court as much as possible. And if I get a short ball, then I can change direction. And that is the only thing I really want to focus on at the beginning of the match. And when the match is over, okay, how do we do with that? You know, say 1 to 10, how'd you do sticking to your cross court patterns and changing direction on the right ball? Then at least we're examining the controllable factors that can help add up to good performance. They don't guarantee it, but they're part of, you know, the necessary ingredients that go to that. So I would say every player who is struggling maybe with playing well and has lost some matches, can we bring it back down to specific behaviors or strategies that you want to use that we can then assess? Let's not talk about any expectations of winning. Let's not talk about any expectations of even playing well. Can we talk more about how we're competing, what our behaviors are, what are specific strategies that we would like to implement? Even that could be tough, Josh, because you might play somebody who's not allowing you to do some of those things. But I think basic stuff like, you know, playing cross court, as much as possible and then looking to change directions, pretty basic. So I would say we want to get away from these things that we can't control so much, and they're driving these patterns in our minds, and these patterns might be driving self-fulfilling prophecy style behaviors. So to kind of dial that back, we need to get into the basic ingredients of what adds up to good tennis for us. Again, the strengths may be part of that. So when you're coming up with some sort of strategy or tactics, hey, look at your strengths. You know, what are the patterns that really feed your strengths? What are the basic things that you need to do with your energy, your body language, your footwork? If we focus on those things and we make some improvement there and we prioritize those and we assess those in a more objective manner, as much as we can, some of it's going to be subjective, of course, you probably will begin to feel better about your game. Now you're building your confidence, or at least your self-efficacy, on something you can control. If your confidence and self-efficacy is all about winning and performing well, that's going to be a bit of a roller coaster ride throughout your career. And so I think that's something that really helped, I think, shift us away from these thoughts of not playing well, I don't feel good. Let's bring it back to things we can control. We know that we want to feel well, so maybe it's as simple as, all right, work on your body language. Work on your breathing on the court. Take more time between points just so you can establish some control over what you're doing. And we go from there.
Yeah, I think that's great advice too. You know, when things aren't going well, rather than focusing so much on the score and the outcome and the impact of the match and these factors that are totally out of your control, as much as you're playing and you're thinking, okay, I really want to win, I really want to beat this player, I really want to raise my UTR, I really want to raise my ranking, none of that helps. None of that actually helps you get there. How you get there is by focusing on, as you say, Brian, the ingredients or the process and the execution of, you know, what it takes to play well, whether that's your footwork, whether that's your time in between points, you know, giving yourself that best chance going into that next point, whether it's your game plan, keep it simple, right? I love that advice of keeping the ball, you know, cross court. Are you making too many unforced errors because you're being, you know, going forward at the wrong moments? Can you play a little bit, you know, give yourself a little bit more margin at times? And sometimes also what that can do is it buys you a little time to start to find that rhythm, to start to get into the match, really. Where sometimes, you know, if you just keep doing what you're doing, you never have the chance to get into a match in that way. So I think, yeah, focusing on the process and on really on controllable factors is a key. I think another thing, you know, when it comes to playing to our strengths, is especially if you're not playing well, it can be very easy to focus on your weaknesses. Let's say your backhand is your weakness and you're making, you know, twice as many errors on that side. It's very easy to focus on that and say, oh, my backhand is horrible. I this always happens. You know, I'm always losing matches because of my backhand. And it's very easy to focus on that. Where instead, if you can think, okay, sure, you know, we're not going to ignore that. We're not going to ignore our backhand and the fact that, you know, we're missing. But okay, how can we maybe move our feet more to put ourselves in the position to hit more forehands? How can we maybe be a little bit more aggressive on the forehand wing if we're, you know, feeling it more on that particular day, so that that can become more of a weapon? How can we set up our forehand through our serve and our return more? So I think focusing on those strengths, and I think also this relates to, you know, outside of match day as well, right? On the practice court. Let's say over the last few weeks, you feel like you haven't been playing your best and you're working on that weakness and you're working on that backhand over and over again, and you're just getting frustrated. reminding yourself of what some of your strengths are and dedicating that time to your strengths and spending the time needed on them to improve the strength, right? To make it more of an asset, more of a weapon, is often leads to better outcomes than continuing to just work on your weakness and focusing on your weakness.
It reminds me of our conversation with David Sammel, who talked about, especially at the pro level, the necessity of having at least two weapons. And, you know, he was in agreement with us. The idea is to maximize the effectiveness of your weapons. But you have to make your weakness good enough that it doesn't prevent you from using your weapons. So in the story that you were just using, the other thing that we could do with that backhand is there one thing that you can do with that backhand? Maybe it's, yes, I can just hit it cross. Okay, then every time you get a backhand, you're going to hit it cross, and now you're looking for forehands again. If they hit it back to your backhand, you do the one thing you can do with it. Maybe it's cross, maybe it's middle, maybe it's high. Just if you only have one option and you know you can do that, then you don't have to have such negative thoughts about your backhand. There's something it can do. If your backhand is so bad it can't do anything, yes, then you need to work on that because it's going to prevent you from using your weapons at a certain point. I do like what you're saying, Josh. Let's build plays and strategies to highlight the weapons and the strengths more. Because there are a lot of guys at the pro level, on the men's side more so, who've had a serve and a forehand. You know, the backhand is good.
Especially from the U.S.
Yeah, right. The backhand is good, but it's not winning them matches, but it doesn't lose them matches. So, you know, I mean, I can think like Pete Sampras, great first serve, great second serve, great forehand, by ATP standards, an average backhand. And some years it wasn't even that good. And then there were some years where it was very good. You know, Marius Bernard told us the story of Richard Krajicek and how he had a two-handed backhand when he was younger, but they switched it to a one and it actually clarified his game for him, where he became a serve and a forehand guy. And they, you know, went on to win Wimbledon 1 year. So if you've developed your game enough and have a lot of clarity about what your weapons are, you can build your strategies around using those more. And if you're feeling like you're not playing well, yes, go to your strengths, use them more. I think a very basic definition of a strength that we use in sports is something you're good at and something you enjoy doing. So these are the shots that you're good at and you like hitting them. Let's see if we can hit them more. That could be a great way to get out of a feeling that you're not playing well. Hit your favorite shots more. That may require, like you were saying earlier, Josh, all right, we got to work on our footwork so I can hit that ball more. Or maybe I'm going to work on my positioning. I mean, I won't recover all the way back to the middle on certain points. I might hang a little bit on, you know, let's say you're righty, I might hang a little bit on that left-hand ad side court a bit more. Let somebody hit to my forehand, but this way I can make that circle and hit more inside-out forehands or inside-in forehands. So they're positioning, footwork, you know, your shot selection, your serve plus one, all of these can begin to highlight your strengths more. And guess what? We're talking about, again, controllable factors. You've now gone beyond just thinking about winning or playing well, and you've peeled back some layers here, and now you're getting to real specific things you can do, you can work on. That's going to help build more self-efficacy. That's going to help rebuild your confidence again, and you'll find your game.
I think that's the right idea, and I know it's something we've talked about a lot, in different episodes, right? It just controlling the controllables or focusing on those controllable factors is the key to, you know, both on the practice court and in matches to, you know, to shifting that momentum and to starting to play better because you're focusing on what it takes to perform well. These are really the factors or the ingredients that make up high performance. And I think it's important, you know, as a player, you know, like, you know, one thing you can do is you can really think about, okay, what does it look like when I'm playing great? Right? What does my attitude look like? How is my footwork? How am I using my strengths? What does, you know, maybe my weaker side, what does that look like during that time? Let's really figure out, okay, what does that look like? And then what do I need to get there? Right? You can almost think backwards in that way. Okay, what does my preparation need to look like? What do I need to do the night before? Not that you'll always get there, but again, trying to think about, you know, how can we focus on that process of playing well again. And I think, you know, it all starts with how we're appraising that situation, right? If we're actually that's interesting. We're recording this on May 31st, which is the day of the day that Carlos Alcaraz played Zverev, Alexander Zverev, and you know it would have been very easy for Zverev to have told himself, okay, I you know when in matches like this, I always lose, right? Going into this match against Carlos Alcaraz, he was, I believe, 0-11 against top 10 players at the Grand Slam level
And he just lost
in Grand
Alcaraz
Slams.
3-1, right, in Madrid.
He just lost to Carlos Alcaraz 3-1 in Madrid. He just, what, about a year and a half ago or so, a little more than a year and a half ago, he was in his first Grand Slam final. He was up two sets and he lost it. Two sets to love, and he lost it. And today was up two sets to love, lost the third set, and then was managed to win a really tight fourth set. You know, was able to put some of maybe those challenging experiences that he's had in his past, and you know, maybe quiet some of the self-doubt or quiet some of that, you know, monologue of, oh, this always happens. This is it, really, you know, how I handle the situation. And in many ways he had been in a slump this year. He historically has thrived at the Masters level, hasn't necessarily had his best performances this year compared to how he's done in other years. And you know, was able to put all that behind him when, you know, one match at a time. I believe there was a match that he came back earlier in this tournament. I believe he was down I think two sets to love. So, you know, was able to, you know, focus on his strengths, sort of minimize his weaknesses. If we think about maybe his second serve at time being a weakness, minimize that and, you know, allow, as you said, Brian, allow himself to use his strengths adequately and use them as strengths. And we see the result. Right, with Carlos Alcaraz, a player that, you know, obviously for good reason has a ton of hype about. He just beat him, you know, Zverev just beat him at a Grand Slam. So I think it just goes to show that by, you know, utilizing some of these mental skills, by thinking strategically about your game and your strengths and weaknesses, and, you know, viewing how you appraise a situation, how you appraise the slump, how you appraise this period of time can have a huge impact. I mean, also, you know, when it comes to appraisal, I think it's important to be really, you know, objective about how you're appraising the situation. It can be very easy when you're in the middle of it, when it's happening to you or you're involved in it, to be very sort of skewed and biased in how you view a certain situation. Where sometimes from, you know, talking to an outsider's perspective, whether that's a sports psychology professional, whether that's a friend, whether that's a coach, whoever, and going through it. Okay, sure, I've lost four or five matches in a row, but really what's been happening? Okay, maybe it's a certain shot has broken down time after time. Maybe I've gotten nervous under the pressure. Maybe there's been some luck involved. There often is luck involved. Maybe you've drawn, you know, maybe, you know, if we're playing USTA tournaments, maybe you've had to play against the one seed a couple times, or maybe you've been really tight and, you know, really close in some of these matches and they haven't gone your way. So I think you know, as we're thinking about how we appraise the situation, it's really important that we do that, we reflect on that in an objective way as much as possible, in order that we can, you know, see the really see the pros and cons and really see the whole story rather than sort of an oversimplified version. I think journaling can do a lot to help that. You know, having a journal for matches, for practices, just for our performances in general, can do a lot to sort of keep things in context and help with that appraisal process.
Yeah, and keep things in perspective, just because, well, let's look, take your example here of Zverev never having beaten a top 10 player in a Grand Slam or in a major event. You could argue, let's say we were working with Zverev as sports psychology professionals, you could easily argue that that record doesn't mean anything. Fresh day, new day. You don't have to defend like why that's never happened before. You just walk onto the court and you play a tennis match and you be in the moment. What has happened in the past, if anything, has just helped you to become who you are today. And who you are today is not the guy who played those other 11 matches. You're somebody else. You're new Alexander Zverev. And it, perhaps this Alexander Zverev is going to win this match. So your history in that situation doesn't have to be predictive of how you will perform today. You get to break streaks all the time. You get to break these patterns, especially if you're a really good learner from that. So your suggestion of journaling is great. You know, I think we see this from sports media people all the time. They'll talk about the history and they talk about these things as if they will have an impact on today's match or today's performance. And I think the time that I see this the most, Josh, is when you watch other sports and more team sports, and they'll say, you know, I've grown up in the era when the Red Sox hadn't won the World Series in like 86 years, right? And you would always hear about how the Red Sox organization could never do this or that. They always choke. But every year you're saying that, well, none of these guys did that. They weren't there in, you know, 1947 when such and such happened. What does it have to do with them? Nothing, right? It's new. So every time you approach the court, you don't need to be carrying this sort of albatross of all your past performances around your neck. You can go out there fresh and just try to, you know, change any sort of patterns that you have in your mind. Let them go. They don't mean anything in this moment. Roger Federer said there was a pre-match interview he gave several years ago before he played Richard Gasquet at the US Open. And he said two really brilliant things in this particular pre-match interview. One, he said, the challenge for every athlete is that you got to bring it every single day. And to me, that means fresh perspective. You doesn't matter who you're playing, you got to bring your best. And if you're thinking about patterns of the past, and I don't do this well, or I always lose in these situations, you are not bringing your best. You're deciding to bring less than your best, if that's how you're going to think. Second thing he said was, the match starts from zero, and we'll see where it goes from there. So again, you're not coming into the match down love three, because supposedly something has happened in the past, or you always get off to a bad start, or I struggle in first round matches. No, score starts at zero. Bring your best self to that, and then let's see where it goes from there. So any expectations of winning or losing, they don't matter. Just bring your best self, whatever that is. Don't bring any preconceived notions or expectations to the table. Start from zero and go from there. Use some of those simple things that we were talking about earlier. You're going to be in a much better place mentally if you can do that. Now, something we were talking about before we began recording, Josh, was that there are other things that are going on in tennis players' lives aside from what's going on in the court. And it does make sense, I think, to take some inventory of the other aspects of your life, are they having some effect, whether it's school stress, work stress, relationship stress, other things that you do, sleeping, are you sleeping enough? Are you eating well? Are you hydrating? So your sources of energy, are you taking care of your physical energy needs, taking care of your mental, emotional energy needs off the court? If you're not paying attention to some of those things, they will have on-court impacts. So I think in the process of, hey, haven't been playing well, don't just restrict it necessarily to the tennis context. We got to remember we're all human beings, and physical energy is super important to everything that we do. So the idea of sleep, eating well, exercise, recovery activities, really important. Things to do to relax our minds, to get mental recovery, emotional recovery. Those might provide some other clues, Josh, I think, in terms of going out onto the court and feeling better about ourselves. If we're feeling good off the court and our energy is good, I think that can bring more motivation and optimism. Maybe burnout could be a factor too. And that's a lot of physical and mental exhaustion. So it's not just some of the tennis things. Look a little bit more globally, take an inventory of how you're doing in these other areas, and they may provide some clues to getting yourself back to a better place with your game.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And when it comes to recovery, or when it comes to burnout and exhaustion, recovery and rest is a really critical component here that I think oftentimes gets overlooked. It's very easy to, as a high performance athlete, when people are playing regularly, it oftentimes people don't want to take any time off. They view taking time off as, oh, I'm going to lose my rhythm, or other people are continuing to train, I'm going to fall behind. Where really often, taking a little bit of time off, spending a little bit of time, focused on that recovery, relaxation, can do a lot both mentally and physically. And that often is a factor when somebody's not playing well for a long period of time. They're often, exhausted, they're often frustrated, and just having a little bit of time to, clear their mind and rest your body can do wonders here. So I think it's important to, as you said, to really take stock in the different areas of your life and, okay, trying to think about what could be contributing to this? And based on that, what do I need to do? Is it rest and recovery? Do I need to address one of those different areas that we're talking about, whether it's hydration, whether it's nutrition, whether it's sleep, whether it's stress in another area of life, and to start to turn this around where, yes, we can certainly talk about forehands and backhands and things on the court. But often it's something else that could be weighing on you as well, or could be, just making it harder to perform at your best level.
Yeah, 100%. So I think, because I think we've all felt that at a certain point. It's just part of being human that there's more to us than being tennis players. Yeah, tennis is really important. And in fact, sometimes, and I've felt this, Josh, at there have been certain times in my life where tennis was the best part of my day because it helped me put other things in context. I think it's easy to get consumed by, say, work or school or something else in your life. And tennis can be a great stress relief in that moment. But maybe you're on the other side. Maybe tennis is more the stress thing, and you got to work on some other releases, whether that's, Josh just texted me a thing from Iga Swiatek. So she's doing a column for the BBC, and she was talking about some of the books she's been reading and how that's a relaxing thing for her. And you mentioned earlier when before we recorded one of your other athletes who also does that as part of like his pregame preparation. So yeah, there might be other relaxation activities that you want to incorporate into what you do. So I think it's really important to pay attention to the fact that we are all human. We are all experiencing life in different ways. And the more that we can properly contextualize the different things that we do, and prioritize our physical energy, our mental and emotional energy. And, we haven't talked so much about this in this episode today, Josh, but I think also understanding, your motivation and your purpose type of energy, that feeds us a lot too. There ought to be, real reasons why we play, why we train, what higher than say, and I think we covered topics like this with both Brian Park and Marcus Daniel, the more purpose piece. There's got to be more to it than I just want to win matches. Stay connected or develop a purpose for why you play, why you want to become really good at this sport. That may also help you put in perspective any sort of ideas of a losing streak or a streak in which you're not playing well.
Yeah, that's a great point. Having that deeper meaning, focusing on your purpose, and I think that also helps, keep things in perspective. Okay, I'm playing for this reason, or this is why I enjoy the sport. This is, why I do what I do, and knowing that there always are ups and downs along the road. No athlete, regardless of how well they've played or performed, or how many, trophies they have, hasn't, there's no athletes that haven't had any bumps in the road, haven't had losing streaks, haven't had times where they haven't performed at their best. So I think keeping that in perspective, can help make that slump or that losing streak more of a blip, or more of just a little dip in the, on the chart. I like to sometimes compare performance to almost like, you look at the stock market and you look at, a certain day it's down 2% or 5% even. And there's a lot of panic. But if you can zoom out, and you can zoom out to 3 months, you can zoom out to a year, 5, 10 years, you can see sort of the direction of how things are going. And, performance can be that same way, where there are going to be bad days or even weeks or months where things aren't going as well. And that's natural. It does happen to every athlete, whether it's injuries, whether it's just, not playing your best, whether it's a certain shot. But being able to keep things in perspective, knowing that it's not just you, that even the best in the world go through this, can be really helpful. And, having the presence of mind during those moments. I think another thing that's important is, during those times, maybe when you're in that losing streak, just continuing to work on your game, just continuing to say, hey, I'm just trying to get better here. I know this will turn around. I'm trying to be the best player I can be. I'm trying to focus on, me just playing at a high level and letting go of that outcome a little bit. I think, if there's one main point I would make, it's that. Oftentimes it's that overwhelming focus on the outcome and on winning, and almost that fear of losing, causes a lot of the tightness, causes a lot, puts a lot of pressure on people, almost prevents them from playing their best. So by continuing to go back to these controllable factors, like we so often talk about, can do wonders to, not saying it's going to guarantee you're going to turn around that losing streak, but it gives you a better chance to perform well and to win matches.
And have a better perspective on what you're really trying to do. I think that's why enjoyment and purpose are really key concepts to focus on in this process. So I think we've covered a lot of interesting points here with respect to potential losing streaks or streaks of not playing well. Any final thoughts, Josh?
No, I think, yeah. In terms of, my final thoughts, I would just go back to, that same point. If things aren't going well, either during a match, things aren't going well, recently, think about what's within your control. Really, what can you, what can you focus on that you can impact? Again, I think that term control, the controllables, is sometimes maybe misinterpreted as if some of these things, like, that are just fully easy. Okay, it's easy to have a good attitude. It's easy to put in, your maximum amount of effort. It's really not. But understanding that these are the things that I can impact. These are the things that, you know, these are the dials that I can really focus on increasing, gives you a better chance to really perform to that level that you're capable of. And especially when things aren't going well, it can be so easy to focus on the outcome, so easy to focus on your weaknesses, so easy to focus on what's not going well, where instead just, you know, taking it a day at a time and really thinking about how can I get 1% better, and how can I, you know, focus on something that I can actually do something about, like these controllable factors.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I guess I'll end with all of that is great. And then if you can factor in some understanding of why you play tennis, what are you really trying to achieve here? What can you learn to enjoy more so than just winning and playing well? There's a lot to enjoy with your tennis, the act of competing, enjoying the battle, enjoying the challenge. And the more that you can talk to yourself about those things, I think the easier it becomes to find your game again and go out onto the court with a great attitude. And you'd be less susceptible to these sort of negative patterns or these self-fulfilling prophecies if you could focus on those things. So, well, great. Thanks, Josh. That was great. Great conversation. And thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. You can also use the Twitter hashtag tennisiq. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. And you can also check us out on Instagram. Thanks again, and talk to you soon in our next episode.